720 WGN and a pleasant Saturday afternoon to you, even if it isn't pleasant outside. Quite a dreary day on the streets of Chicago. And I got Cubs tickets today in the bleachers, so that'll be really fun right after this. We're on till 1 o'clock. No White Sox baseball if you're tuning in just now. We were supposed to have the pregame at 12:35. That will not happen due to the conditions up in Minnesota. Joined now by Mark Horner, the president of Fairhaven Wealth Management. And Mark, thanks for coming in on this dreary Saturday.
Great to be with you, John.
And let's start the conversation right off because we're talking about we're going to talk about millennials and their investment habits or lack thereof. But I wanted to talk about this first bullet point that you provided here is that according to a 2017 Go Banking Rates survey, 57% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their saving accounts. So this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm in for Amy Guth. $1,000 in their saving accounts doesn't sound like much to me. And I'm shocked that it's 57%.
It is shocking. And I think it's due to, I think, a number of factors. One, I think, is just general lack of financial education awareness, right, which is a major problem just across the entire economy. I think there's also an economic reality,
yes,
of we've had slowly increasing incomes over the years. College costs have just gotten out of control. There are other studies that talk about how much student loan payments are eating up in everybody's month-to-month budget. So I think it's a combination of both economic challenges and, again, just lack of awareness of the importance of saving.
When you look at 57%, obviously you can take a giant chunk of that, or at least a large chunk of that, and say that it has to do with a lot of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
Plenty of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Some aren't even making it paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
So saving even $10 or $15 a paycheck is tough for people. But when I say that number, $10, $15, $20, is that where it starts? I mean, it seems daunting to some people, but when you are making minimum wage or maybe barely above, you're between jobs, is it about taking those first steps and letting that ball kind of roll down the hill a little bit?
So time is a huge advantage when we're talking about money and getting started early. The earlier you get started, so the longer you have to save for whatever goal it might be, whether it's college, buying your first house, or down the road towards retirement, the less you actually have to save due to the power of compounding interest. So yes, those numbers might sound small, $10, $15 a week, but if somebody's starting in their first job, even out of just high school, they don't need to be college graduates, they absolutely have the ability to save a significant amount of money in retirement. But you hit the nail on the head. Getting started is the first step, and then sticking with it.
I think the key for I've been lucky, and I'll go into this a little bit later when we talk about millennials and their saving habits, is that someone really got in my ear at a very right when I started a brand new job to cut it away before you even see that paycheck.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's key. If there is any way for you never to even see that money into your bank account, to get it out of your hands if you can pre-tax, but even there's ways of doing it so you never see it in your bank account, that must be one of the most effective ways, because then you never know you have the money.
Huge. And you touch on two important points. One is you ran into the right person. So for, again, it's just by happenstance for most people, whether it's a family member, a mentor at work, a friend that you just bump into that person that shares with you that knowledge. But yeah, then you get used to, if you just have things automatically deducted from your paycheck, so a common example is going to be a 401k plan, you just tend to get used to living on the money that shows up in your checking account. And so if you can design a way to automate your savings so that you don't even see it, I think a lot of people would be surprised how they can adjust their lifestyle to live on the money that's in the paycheck or in the checking account, rather.
Certainly. And any of our listeners out there who have younger individuals, whether it's kids or grandkids that are in those late teens or early 20s, give them as much advice and share as much of this interview with them as you can. But I got to ask you, Mark, because there are a lot of listeners out there that don't have as much in savings as they want to. They are at 45, 50, 55 years old. And I think that every time we tell people, save as early as you can, it almost puts a burden on people's
right.
shoulders that haven't yet.
Right.
But our advice to them should be, I guess, save as early as you can, but it's never too late to at least start trying.
Absolutely. And one of the first things that we talk about with clients that come in to visit with us and start conversations with, well, I wish I was saving a little bit more. I wish I had a little bit more money in the 401k. The first thing that we say to people is we just got to put down the guilt and walk it, because that's not helpful. So how getting back on track towards your goals is about taking positive steps towards those goals, not beating yourself up for what you may or may not have done over the last 5 or 10 or whatever number of years it might be. So much more focused on the future and where it is that you're trying to go and taking the steps. So if that is saving a little bit more in the company retirement plan, spending a little bit less from month to month, it's about taking those positive steps to accomplish those goals that are far more important than beating yourself up.
I think also a lot of people may have incurred credit card debt during certainly the recession era, yeah, and medical bills that pile up if they were uninsured. What's your advice to people that say, look, I'm not saving because I need every dime to pay down debt right now that I can?
So they're back to that economic reality. If somebody's got a credit card bill that's got an 18% or 20% interest rate on it, clearly the better economic decision is to knock down that high interest rate debt first, mm-hmm, and really take big swings at that. But I think it's important to remember, back to the power of time, you know, to end up debt free when it's time to retire with no money saved for retirement, that's a bleak picture.
Right.
So maybe striking a balance between if a person's identified an excess $100 per month, just to pick a number, and they've got that credit card debt, maybe you send $75 towards the credit card and you get started saving with that other $25,
right?
Because again, you got to pay the groceries, you got to pay the rent, you going out to dinner, retirement, right, all those expenses don't go away. You need to have some money built up to fund those expenses.
Well, yeah, by going 75, 25 or something, whatever the numbers may be for you, yeah, you might be sacrificing a little bit on the high interest credit card you're paying. But again, depending on how long you retire, that compounding interest may then more than make up for
it
that.
It could very well more than make up for it.
I wanted to talk, we got to take a quick commercial break, but you're going to stick around with me, Mark, because I want to chat about millennials. And I know that often turns some listeners off, but I think there's advice and interesting words of wisdom that people that have been through or maybe are entering retirement that can offer to millennials. And actually, I'd love for anyone out there that has either learned lessons through the good habits they've done or the bad habits, feel free. We want to give some millennials some help. 312-981-7200, talk or text. And Mark, we're going to see what advice you have for those millennials too, okay? Plenty more coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch right after this. Continuing the Wintrust Business Lunch here, joined, we got a couple Marks with me right now. Mark Horner, president of Fairhaven Wealth Management. We're just chatting off the line, Mark, about some stuff as well, about savings. But we're going to shift the conversation a little bit towards millennials. And Mark, I'm pretty shocked, and we're going to get to Mark calling on the phone in just a moment. The good news after we talked through the savings issues that a lot of Americans have is that millennials are actually saving pretty well.
They are. They are better than most previous generations.
But we're talking that millennials are saving not necessarily in the proper way, I guess you could say.
So there's two steps. One is actually saving the money instead of spending it. So again, millennials are a popular punching bag. They deserve some credit for what they've been doing as far as savings go. Unfortunately, the next step, they're not doing such a good job, and that is what you do with that money once it's saved. And so millennials in general, of course, there are going to be exceptions person by person, but in general, are underinvested in the stock market. And that is, it's understandable, mm-hmm, if we think about the economic landscape over the last 15, 20 years with,
right,
the tech wreck of 2001 and then the great recession of 2008. That they'd be scared.
Yeah,
of the stock market. Totally understand.
I'm the older age of millennials, and my first job, I kept on to it, but it was right in the middle of the Great Recession, and it scared people. And a lot of millennials who are a little bit younger got out of college while that was happening and could,
right,
not find a job for years.
Right. No, it's completely understandable. So this goes back to being equipped with the right knowledge and the right perspective. So as far as the stock market goes, as an investment, if you go back to 1926 and consecutive rolling 20-year periods, so just one 20-year, mm-hmm, period after the next, the stock market since 1926 in those 20-year periods has made money every single time.
And it's interesting you start from 1926 and not 1933, because that includes the Great Depression.
That includes the Great Depression, a World War, a Vietnam War, the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, the list goes on and on about what economic or global challenges there were. And in that landscape, 100% of the time, the stock market has made money for investors. So if you think about somebody that's in their mid-30s that might have not 20 years until retirement, but maybe 30, and as we're living longer, life doesn't end at retirement.
Right.
So maybe your longevity is not just until retirement, but you might have a 40, 50, maybe even a 60-year lifespan expectation. If the stock market's made money every single time in those 20-year periods, to be invested right now as a younger person, which I'm 48, I'll lump myself into that group, a younger person.
There you go.
To be invested in the stock market historically has been a guaranteed bet to, mm-hmm. to make money. Now, that's not to say I'm guaranteeing going forward,
well, certainly,
but great odds.
And it's not necessarily guaranteed 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, but you've got to look long-term.
100%.
And put it away and don't look at it. I look every single day, but I don't do anything to it. That's good. I just hit refresh, and I like to know what that number is because it's like a fun little game. But I would never ride it in terms of playing it every single day, in terms of long-term savings.
That's correct. So that's drawing a distinction between
yes.
are you a trader,
right.
which is short-term, or are you an investor, which is long-term? And
right.
being an investor is about putting together a portfolio that makes sense for you and kind of letting it do its thing.
Are many millennials short-term investors anymore? I mean, I know that... You know, I can remember some of my friends pre-recession in college. It was new back then, using E-Trade or something like that. It was almost like a little game with tens or $15 or $20. Most of my friends that I talk to now put it away in 401k. They don't play that every single day game. Is that a game that more of us should be playing?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
In my opinion, I haven't seen any data that breaks it down
yeah.
by age group who might be more trading oriented or more long-term investor oriented. But it's difficult, you know, to stick with the stock market every day because you're getting feedback. It's up 500, down 500. Media headlines, present company excluded,
right.
talk about the market plummeting or free fall or skyrocket. That sort of language is difficult to not internalize. And then when you layer on top of that what we've talked about in terms of their own individual experiences back to 2008, that makes it that much more difficult to stick with long-term investment strategies.
That is fascinating that the flow of information can impact how our psyche of how things are, because we're always so up and down with every minute-by-minute news. Twitter, we know what the stock market is every single time we open our phones if you are subscribing to the right apps or you have that. And that can really breed a sense of insecurity about what's going on. Maybe that's playing into the role of millennials staying away a little bit more. The up-and-down roller coaster of it all.
I don't see how it isn't. I think you really need to be, you need to consciously resist that, as you say, second by second information flow of am I doing the right thing or not. So at some level, I think for long-term investment goals, you just need to ignore that.
Yeah, exactly. Just hit refresh and know what the number is, but don't do anything. Mark Horner, the president of Fairhaven Wealth Management. I teased that we had another Mark on the line. And Mark Horner, you've never had questions answered on the air, so this is new territory for you.
This is a first.
All right. Mark has some advice for millennials. Mark, what's your advice for the millennials out there?
Yeah, I think one of the most overlooked ways to at least save a few bucks is to, I work with a lot of young people, and many of them don't take advantage of either pre-tax savings in the area of flexible spending for medical expenses or commuter expenses. So if you're spending $150 a month on commuter expenses, a lot of corporations certainly allow you to pay for that on a pre-tax basis. You could take that money that you're saving from the taxes and contributing to the weight to the commuter expenses and putting that in some sort of savings and vehicle and such. So it's just, I find a lot of younger people don't take advantage of those pre-tax savings opportunities, and it just seems like an easy way to more savings.
That's a great point, Mark. Thank you for the phone call. Mark, that's a great point, because even if it's $30 or $40 here or there, that's money that can go pre-tax somewhere else.
It absolutely is. So my compadre Mark on the phone, that's level two thinking in financial in financial planning. So starting out with getting the 401k squared away, and then understand, I think his point primarily is understanding all the different benefits that might be in your company benefit package and taking advantage of those. That it's easy to get that booklet at the annual enrollment meeting and just kind of breeze through it and go get the free donuts or something. Everybody should really be spending some time with their human resources people to really understand what some of those benefits are. Another great one that a lot of companies have is company-sponsored life insurance,
yeah.
which generally, compared to the stuff that you might get out on your own, is dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not taking advantage of that, that's another one to save money by getting a financial benefit for less than you might be able to get it on your own.
Also, HSAs and FSAs are great opportunities. And those
Absolutely.
Are completely different discussions, but I think they contribute to the larger discussions that if you are pinching pennies a little bit, trying to save where you can. Again, those $30, $40, $50 a month here or there that you've shaved off somewhere else then can go allocated somewhere else.
The pennies add up. Pennies turn into dollars real fast.
Mark, where can people reach for more information for you and all that you you guys provide?
So our office is out in Oak Brook. The website is fairhavenwealth.com. There's a lot of information that we've got out there around financial education. So we're trying to do something about this in our own small way by providing information about a variety of financial planning topics in a jargon-free, video-based. All the videos are less than 3 minutes long, so I'd love to get feedback, as I always do, from people about what they think about the videos, and they're out on our website.
And anyone that has financial literacy or is really aware of financial things, please teach whoever you can that's younger. That's the one area we really lack, and that's not an area we were able to get into today, Mark, but really, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Plenty more on the Winters Business Lunch coming up right after this. Seven twenty WGN on a gorgeous Saturday afternoon in the city of Chicago. Man, we love temperatures in the 40s apparently this spring. 40s is actually pretty good. We've had some days in the upper 30s and such, so a little rainy here, and the White Sox canceled up. If you're tuning in for White Sox baseball, as you heard Bob mention, that the game is canceled here today due to snow in Minneapolis. Not much better here. The Cubs, though, still hoping to get their game in. And I'll be in the bleachers. That's at 1:20. We'll see if I'll make it there on time. Joining me now, Carolyn Leonard and Monica Black. Guys, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Well, let me walk through who you guys are. So you're two Chicago Trailblazers, and you're putting together money, not only yours, but hopefully listeners' money. Is there anyone out there that's looking to help behind the 1920 Vote Your Money campaign? It's the only women-led and female-focused angel investing initiative in Chicago. And guys, I was first of all, welcome to the show. And I was hoping you guys could walk through why the need for a woman-focused organization and leadership, financial raising opportunity for women only. Why? What is the need?
Well, the need is that research shows that women only receive $2.90 for every $100 a man does. So we have this huge gap in their ability to raise funds. The reason we need more money, more women involved, is that people invest in people who look like themselves. And so if we get more women as investors or women understanding the space, then we have more women at the table to fund female founders.
I want to hit that number one more time, because we had the income pay inequality gap the other day. And that is, depending on some estimates, anywhere from 77 cents to 82 cents on the dollar.
Right.
77 to 80% of what men make. Mm-hmm. We're talking 3% of what men get in terms of investment is allocated towards women. That is a shocking number. Why is it? Is it because when men want to give their money, or women, they give it to not only the people of the same gender, but also people that look like them in terms of color, creed, and all those sorts of things as well?
Absolutely. And when you mentioned the difference in diversity and color, if you're an African American woman, it's totally shocking to me. So I'm almost hesitant to say, because people say, oh, no, that must be wrong. A male can go to a VC with a business plan on the back of a napkin and raise $1.3 million. An African-American woman with ROI looking to scale her business on average gets $36,000. And she's making money.
To the skeptic out there that says, well, that's just the way business is. You got to fight your way through it. Why is that a problem for people that aren't even investors? Why is that a problem for people that don't really have a huge interest in what happens in the business world?
Well, I mean, I think that we've got such societal issues and challenges. People at a high level are just really not aware of all the unconscious biases that are out there. And so this is something that's not only happening to female founders, but it's happening all over the place economically with Equal Pay Day, as you mentioned earlier. And so, you know, it's just something that we do have to continue to work through. But I think you've got to really just ask yourself, is it really on the burden of the individual who's not making the money and who's suffering that level of oppression to continue to always work harder? At some point, we've just got to give other people a fair chance. Mm-hmm. And to realize also that for all the success that people have had in life, that they were given a fair chance and that there were a lot of people who helped them along the way as well.
And I imagine it's a trickle-down thing, that when women own businesses, that impacts the communities too.
Right. Oh my goodness. Well, that's what we really love about this initiative. So when you economically support female founders. You are supporting not only her and her business idea, oftentimes that's a business idea that is solving a problem, a real world problem that not only women might be facing, but the community at large might be facing. There might be a more of a social lens to the problem that she's solving, but you are also economically supporting her family for the way that she will have that trickle-down effect for them. And then she also is very committed to causes for women, even when they think about investing in general, much more likely to do more values-based investing.
And you mentioned that values-based investing, and we also talked about, you and I, we had a program on Now.Chicago on WCIU, the show, station I work for, and we talked about, I don't want to say that women are better investors, or better with your money than men are, but there are numbers out there that show that yeah. You might get a little more return on your investment from a woman-led business instead of a man-led business.
Absolutely. The return on investment for a woman-led business is 2 basis points greater than a man.
Why?
Well, it's because women have a harder time getting equity to begin with. So they have bootstrapped longer and put their own sweat equity into it. They generally go when they need it to scale and grow. So she has assumed personally all the risk of her early stage venture. Mm-hmm. So you are now getting in a company that the risk has basically been assumed by the founder.
So the struggle to get to where you are, to even get to the point of expansion, means that they've already dotted the I's, crossed the T's. They yep. know the risk that's out there, and they're better prepared for the next step.
Right. And they're either looking to hire more employees, build out larger warehouse spacing. They are doing something tangible with their money that goes to the bottom line, where a man may be looking just to develop the concept out. She's already got the concept out there. She's already tweaked it. It's mm-hmm. ready to go. All she needs is additional funding to get her to the next level.
It's not just on the back of a napkin.
No, it is fully baked.
Yeah. So I got to ask, is an interesting angle of this discussion is that where we go from here. So women listeners out there, or men too, because we want men to help out this year. We'll talk about the Got Your Back part of this campaign as well. But a lot of people out there might be saying, well, that's all great. Where do I find women investors to give money to? And I think that that's what's wonderful about your campaign is you identify what the issue is, but then yeah. provide, in a ways, a solution. So tell us about how the 1920 Vote Your Money campaign works.
Okay, so we are asking for women to make contributions to the 1920 Vote Your Money campaign, 1920 being the year that many women got the right to vote. But here's the thing. It took until 1965 until all women got the right to vote. We don't want to have to wait that long and for all of us to walk through the door together. So contribution levels to fund a collective fund that we will then develop a committee around, an investment committee, who will then help us to make investments in 20 female-led startups throughout Chicago and the Midwest. So this is us building together. So we always say, you know, this is our opportunity to collectively move forward as women and say, we think that this is important, and we're not going to let her stand out there and only raise $2.90, that Chicago is not happy with that number and that outcome.
I want to ask exactly kind of how that works, because this could be confusing for some people. Are you looking for big contributions in terms of investments? Like, it's like Shark Tank. You're going to invest money, and they're going to have some say in how this all goes, and then they're going to get a return on it. Or are you looking for contributions to build this campaign, or is it a little bit of both? How does it work?
No, it is a contribution-based model, and so we're asking people to contribute at the $1,000 level. You become a member of the Diamond Angel Membership Circle.
Talk about that. What is the Diamond Angel Membership Circle?
So listen, that's where women are going to come together. We say female founders or funders. So future female funders will have the opportunity to be in the membership circle. We're going to have dynamic educational programs for women to go to not only learn about and heal their emotional relationship with money, but to figure out what your role is in this entrepreneurial ecosystem. It's not a one-size-fits-all model. And I think that that's what is really exciting for a lot of women to say, you're saying I can get involved in different ways. I can have different ways of supporting female founders. I'm excited about that. And I've always wanted to learn about angel investing, but I didn't want to have to go to the boys' table to do it because that's not how I want to invest. I know that those are not my values. This is a safe space where women all walks of life, backgrounds can come together and say, I want to learn about this journey, what's going on in Chicago entrepreneur ecosystem, but also learn what it means for me to think about becoming an angel investor.
We often talk about with volunteering opportunities or whether you're contributing to charities. This is not a charity by any stretch of the imagination, but the idea of is when you start giving money to a cause that maybe you're just recently woken up to or just certainly you're caring a lot more about, when you make that step financially, often what comes next is a civic duty to push that cause further.
Right.
And not only are you getting this this membership as part of that contribution, but you're all of a sudden engaged in a conversation that will then propel you further as an individual moving forward. Just like volunteering for any project, you start to become a part of this cause.
That's exactly it. Listen, on Equal Pay Day, one of the things that I walked away with is there were four speakers who said, this issue is about women learning to talk about money. And that's really what this opportunity is about. It's a double wide gap here. Yes, female founders are not able to receive the investments that they deserve. But also on the other side, we've got female funders who are being completely discouraged from a great opportunity and a great way of economically supporting other women and themselves at the same time.
All right. So WGN's all about the Chicago conversation. There might be men out there that are saying, what the heck is this all about? Feel free to text 312-981-7200. And I'm not trying to say let's promote some agitation, but let's have a conversation
let's
about what's
about
really
it.
Going
yeah.
on here. And I think
yeah.
that's an important thing. And then maybe we can convince some people that might be on the fence to get your back in the Got Your Back campaign. And I also want to talk, I mentioned the charity. This isn't a charity. And I wanted to say that what the benefit is for businesses that are more representative of the world that we live in. So we're going to get yep. to that after the commercial break. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. WGN, Wintrust Business Lunch, joined by Carolyn Leonard, CEO of Diamond, and Monica Black, also a psychologist, a PhD, Monica. It's interesting because, Carolyn, you were one of the first female traders
yep.
on the CBOE. Monica, you come from a psychological standpoint. You guys must make a really interesting pair to bring this business and the mind of business together, and that's what probably helps contribute to the 1920 Vote Your Money campaign.
Yeah. Yes, it is the diversity, and it's the different way we think. And besides her education, and I'm older than she is, and I'm white and she isn't, we have all this diversity, which brings a much richer conversation. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about women and money, it even makes a much more in-depth, because culturally there are nuances about money.
You mentioned that diversity amongst the two of you and what mm-hmm. you're doing, and yeah. we talk about diversity in business and how important that is. Just from we need to level the playing field, give everyone an opportunity to succeed. But from a financial standpoint, it makes sense, money and sense wise, to have a business and to have in our community leaderships of every gender and color and creed, because it makes everyone more money in the long run.
It really does. You know, at the end of the day, if you have a leadership team that reflects the community is more likely to engage in your services and products. So for us, it's just how you do business well. We often say, you know, it's really interesting that people make this diversity thing so complex. It's so every yeah. day. If you want yourself to succeed alongside other people. There's nobody who's doing business well completely on their own. The more diversity that you've got in your boat, you know, yeah. trying to get to someplace better together, the quicker you're going to get there. So we really try and, even in the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Chicago, which is quite fragmented across different communities, race, ethnicity, yeah. age, and gender, we are really trying to create a space in which all women can come together and say that this is part of my Me Too, that I see myself in this ecosystem. Why have it any other way? We're not going to raise enough money with African-American women on the South Side, Latinas more on the West Side, Asian-Americans, everybody fragmented and segmented in the community. It requires everybody to come together. And when we say that, of course, it's inclusive of all people. I think that's the thing. People feel that inclusivity, especially when it comes to money, means that, you know, that white male cannot be involved in it. And we've never said that.
Right.
So if we say inclusive, and that's what we're doing here at Diamond Angels, is we're building an inclusive table, then we mean inclusive.
Well, you say inclusivity, I think that word now has a partisan feel to it, that Democrats are pro-inclusiveness, Republicans aren't. It's yeah. a non partisan issue. This is something that is a conversation that should be had when we talk about diversity of business leaders. I think it's so important because we have such a diversity in terms of consumers. And the less blind sides that a business or a business leader has, the more able they are to reach their consumers more effectively. And included in that conversation, especially with women being the people that have more businesses and have more money to run their businesses, women are making so many of the decisions when it comes to consuming.
Yeah, and women make 80% of all financial decisions when it comes to their family budget. And if you think about the decisions she's making where we live because she's looking at all the schools. And so she's influencing that decision. General Motors was smart enough to listen to women when they said they wanted cup holders in the car because we have more and more working women. And they went out and asked women, what do you want? They said cup holders. I'm always spilling coffee. It sounds simple, but they listen to the consumer. But she is the car buyer.
I love that you gave me a blind spot that in a car where we have literal blind spots. That was really good, Carolyn. I don't know if you planned that. That was incredible. We had a text from the 773. The things that you guys are promoting sound great. As a black man with sound business ideas, I feel them. Unfortunately, money and race is a concern, and you add gender to that equation, and he says in all caps, volcanic eruptions, which is so true. And you know, I think that while you're obviously promoting the gender thing, because that is an extreme gap, you're also very smart to tackle this from a cultural perspective too, and a race issue as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we have got to get sort of right-size the society. I think Chicago is such a great city to do that in.
Right.
Chicago embraces diversity. We can do this. We have some areas we need to get better at. That's fine. That's for the journey. We will work on that and we will push that forward. But exactly, it doesn't have to be this volcanic eruption. When you talk about inclusion and you don't make it competitive, then we don't have to have the volcanic eruption. We can actually just have a great conversation with amazing leaders who happen to be diverse. So don't focus so much on the diversity. We're just talking about investing in incredible women who've got incredible businesses that are already working well, who happen to be diverse.
We also, I think that what's so poignant about your campaign, it's not only about raising money for women investors, but it's also getting women to be the investors themselves.
Yep.
That what is it, 1% of investors of all angel, or 19% of all investors are women, right? Of angel investors.
So that's across the US.
And what is angel investors, by the way? What does that term mean?
An angel investor would be an individual who invests money in an early start venture, one that is many times it's pre-revenue.
Mm-hmm. So when you're issuing way more expenses than revenue, so you're really more of a risky sort of situation.
Right.
It's 19%. That number seems shockingly low as well. And that's one of those wonderful things that is happening. So once again, if someone's just tuning in as we're wrapping up the show here, remind people exactly how they can get involved. What is the best way to reach you guys to find out more information?
Okay, so if you want to really find out more about what this community is about, what this initiative is about, we have Angel Hour events throughout Chicago. Please follow us online at www.dymnd.com, but it's dymynd.com. That's how you can stay abreast of those opportunities. If you're ready to really make that contribution, go to dymnd.com/angels, because that's where you can make that contribution to the 1920 campaign. We are trying to create a world in which all women can invest, so you can make contribution levels of $100, $250. We are asking that we have contributions of $1,000 because we're looking to grow that membership circle in the community of women in Chicago. About 3% of women would be accredited angel investors. And so we're trying to grow that 3% because she's the one who can close that gap. No longer should we be only investing $2.90 in women.
And when you get those people to start making those investments, they start having these conversations.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I got to ask, we have a few more minutes, and Carolyn and Monique, I have extra questions for you aside from the campaign, which is fascinating. Carolyn, what was it like being one of the first women traders on the CBOE floor?
Well,
I mean, you must have some fascinating stories.
I do, but I can't tell most of them.
I mean, it must have been an incredible boys' club.
It was a locker's room. I came down in 1976, and there were women clerks. There were women that worked for the exchange. There weren't women trading their own money. So when I said, I'm going to do this, men literally said to me, I've never traded with a woman, Don't take it personally, sweetheart. I'm not trading with you.
They just have to throw that sweetheart in
the
there.
Sweetheart.
I just have to do that. I'm glad that makes us cringe these days, or a lot of us makes us cringe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I imagine you can have a billion stories. And I guess this brings me to my next point. And look, we have a lot of issues in this country with gender relations. I think, and I just, maybe it's me being over-trusting. I think for the most part, we're all good people looking, and we want equal opportunities for people.
Right.
We just aren't totally aware, and as the kids say, woke to some of these issues. When we talk about the discrepancies in angels, investors, and business leaders, do you think that this is people simply just having blind spots, and once they're made more aware of it, they can do it? Or do you think that there is some, I don't want women or people of color in this conversation? Is it kind of a mix between the two?
So I'm going to answer this. I'm going to try and get through a three-part response.
Okay.
So number one, look, I think that we've had generations of people who, you know, just really believe that this world was created for their family to succeed. And so when you hear that, that means that people like me get to succeed, they get to advance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's embedded in my sort of the way that I think my intellectual DNA, then when it comes to the next generation, they start saying, oh, maybe the success factor could look like it's open to other people. Well, that's jarring. And in this country, the second point is, you know, it's so competitive that we feel that in order for somebody else to win, somebody has to lose. And I think that that's really the underlying assumption here, is that in order for women to win, that we're saying that men have to lose. And that couldn't be what we're saying. We're just asking for women to win as well. Why can't we create a space in which all people can win? It shouldn't have to be either or in this conversation. So the third thing I'll say is I do think that people have a lot of blind spots. But, you know, we have a lot of stereotypes out there that are fused into our culture. One thing that we're always challenged with talking to women is that women have the assumption themselves that women are lower risk.
Mm-hmm.
So women make low-risk financial decisions. Well, you know what? Women take lots of risk in life, and they rock it. So we say women rock risk all the time. And even as it comes to financial risk, it's not that women have lower risk because women aren't willing to take the risk. It's that women have lower risk because they have a larger care network. And so when they make financial moves and decisions, they're not making it on just behalf of themselves. They're carrying, on average, 8 to 10 people in their head. Well, that would make your risk assessment different. That would make your even financial, long-term financial strategy for yourself different for all the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating discussion to be had. And you mentioned that everyone can get, I don't think it's about dividing up the pie more. I think it's about making more damn pie.
That's exactly right.
Which who can argue against that?
Right.
Anytime. Carolyn and Monica, thank you guys so much for joining us. And you want to give us the website one more time where people can go for more information on all this stuff?
Certainly. So it's diamond.com/angels. So it's www.dymynd.com/angels.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Have
thank
a wonderful you. Day, even though it's a little bit wet out there. Okay, that got us right up to 1 o'clock. No surprise there.